Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future. I'm speaking with Mark Millis, director of the Breakthrough Propulsion Physics Program at NASA's Lewis Research Center. Since 1982, from earning his degree in physics at Georgia Tech, he's been working on various astronautic engineering projects, including spanned engineering cockpit displays for microgravity aircraft trajectories, ion thrusters, control and monitoring systems for rockets, and cryogenic propellant delivery systems. And he conducts theoretical and experimental research on the possibility for creating propulsion breakthroughs. His program in Breakthrough Propulsion Physics includes looking at different methods, potential methods, theoretical methods for doing faster than light travel. In his free time, he builds and photographs and writes articles on scale models. Welcome, Mark Millis.
Thank you.
Now, your program has attracted a lot of attention because it explores branches of physics that some physicists think are pretty theoretical. What are the why are physicists skeptical of some of the things that you're looking at?
Well, for some very good reasons. On the faster than light one, which by the way is only one part of the things that we're considering, and maybe I can say something about the others later. But on the faster than light one, special relativity is the field which says that no material objects can go faster than the speed of light within space-time. But where the back door has opened up from general relativity, which talks about how space-time gets warped by the presence of matter or energy, the back door is manipulating space-time itself. And even when you go into that realm, you encounter some very large potential showstoppers as we call them. Like if you could manipulate space-time to create a wormhole or to create the Alcubierre warp drive, you need enormous energy levels, and it has to be negative energy, which may or may not exist. And also, the hardest one to swallow is that it would probably imply time travel or causality paradoxes. And all of these are as yet uncertain subjects.
Because the time travel, let's stop there, because to get from here to someplace many light years away in minutes would involve going faster than light and would take us back in time?
Well, and I still haven't seen a real clear explanation of this, but it's possible if you assume that you have wormholes, if you create scenarios where you go in a moving wormhole and out, that you can create time paradoxes. I mean, you have to go through some a certain set of circumstances to do it, but it's not just as straightforward as you go faster than light, you go back in time.
Mm-hmm.
There's the difference between the perception and the actual, I have a hard time even explaining that with graphics, let alone just in words.
Mm-hmm. So you're working on many different kinds of propulsion, and FTL, or faster than light, is one branch of that. What are some of the slower than light propulsion methods?
Well, basically the program has three goals, and each of these goals we realize might not be attainable, but as I like to say, progress is not made by conceding defeat. But goal number one, and if we could just achieve goal number one, we would probably revolutionize spaceflight, is to find some way to push spacecraft where we don't have to use rockets that have to bring all the propellant along with them. If we could find some way to push against something else that exists in space, or modify gravitational fields, or interact with space-time itself, then we completely eliminate the propellant burden. And to give you an idea of how big a problem that is that if we wanted to go to our nearest star and give ourselves 10 centuries to do it and use the like the rockets that are on the space shuttle, I think we still need, what was it, the mass of our sun for propellant or something really enormous like that.
So we would need to be able to generate our propellant as we went along.
Yeah. Or find some completely different way that we don't need it. For example, automobiles, when they propel themselves, they're pushing against the road, and the road and attached to the whole Earth is the reaction mass. And an aircraft is the air. So if there is something else in space that can be our reaction mass that we can push against, we don't have to bring it along with us.
So finding aspects of matter in vacuum that we might be able to push against is part of your project.
Yeah.
And is that the same as the vacuum energy hypothesis?
Well, that would be one of the candidates. Another one that's maybe an easier illustration is the cosmic background radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in practice, this would not be feasible because the energy density is way too low. But if you could make a sail, like a radiometer, that absorbed the radiation on one side and reflected it on the other side and put it inside this radiation, say the cosmic background, there would be a net force on it. Mm. Now, like I said, in practice, the energy density is too low, and there's some other problems you get into. But philosophically, if there is anything else in space, perhaps the vacuum fluctuation energy that could behave like that, you might be able to create a propulsion effect using it.
Are there currents in interstellar radiation? I mean, is it going in one direction that we would be able to tilt a sail into?
Well, in the cosmic background radiation, it, I believe, is coincident with the mean rest frame of the galaxy. And the vacuum fluctuation energy is likely to be what's called Lorentz invariant, which means that you can't tell how fast you're moving through it. You only could perceive it as you're accelerating. But still there's some debate on exactly those interpretations, too.
Now, there's an experiment being conducted this month on ion propulsion drives. You want to tell us about that?
Oh, yeah. Matter of fact, ion thrusters, I worked a little bit on that several years ago. At Lewis Research Center, this dates back to the 60s, and experiments were flown, I believe, in 1967 to test an ion thruster. And that's a rocket where instead of using chemical reactions to thrust the rocket, you take a gas, you ionize it, and you use electric fields to accelerate the ions. And the good news, bad news story is, the good news is you get excellent propellant or fuel efficiency, if you want to call it that, where it does not take very much propellant at all to do a lot of what's called delta V, moving something. The bad news is that it doesn't have much thrust, so you can't use it for launching things. But for space probes, like the one that's due to be launched, it works quite well, because these thrusters can thrust for a very long time as well and eventually get up to quite high speeds. And I believe the size that they're using is 30 centimeters, the grids, and basically they kind of look like a screen that has thousands of volts potential across them.
And so this might be a potential interstellar method, because we would take years and years to get the propulsion working and eventually slow down at the other end.
Yeah, the fuel efficiency of that type of device is much better than chemical rockets. But even there, you'd still run into troubles. Like, for example, if you assume you could get something up to, I'll just pick a number, 50,000 seconds of ISP, and that's the units that these things come in. If you wanted to, say, do the mission in 100 years, you're talking about a mass ratio that's on the order of billions. In other words, if your mass is 1 kilogram of spacecraft, you need 1 billion kilograms of propellant even then.
Mm.
It's definitely a improvement over just chemical rockets.
Now, the creation of the BPPP program, Breakthrough Propulsion Program, is a bit of an unusual thing for NASA, right? NASA's been pretty tied to practical, tangible, short-term goals. Is this a new direction that they're going in?
Back in, I believe, 1995, Dan Golden had asked Marshall Space Flight Center to make a long-range space propulsion development plan, and he asked them to be more visionary than had traditionally been done. And it was in the course of them putting together that long-range plan that they sought me out to propose a program in this area. And yes, this is more visionary than we have traditionally done, and NASA's going through a lot of changes of trying to work more economically and faster, cheaper, better. Sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at a very early stages, and I guess you could say we're testing the waters. The first question was, is there anything out there in the peer-reviewed literature that could be starting points? And the answer is yes. The second question is, could you do any research today and something that could be relatively affordable and short-term to see whether or not you could make meaningful progress? And we had a workshop and came up with about 80 candidate ideas. A few of them were probably pretty good. The next step will actually begin to solicit proposals and fund research. And then after a couple of years of doing that, we'll reassess, are we making meaningful progress? If the answer is yes, then we'll likely increase support. If the answer is no, then we'll defer the program until more significant science develops.
So you're actually going to be a grantor as well as conducting your own research?
Yeah, well, ever since I was asked to lead this program, I haven't been able to do any of my own research. So all that is on the back burner, and I don't know if or when I'll ever be able to get back to that. But when setting this program up, it is open to all forms of organizations, other NASA centers, other government labs, universities, and industry. And in our solicitation will be the criteria to sort out those that are the leading candidates.
Well, it seems like a very apt move on NASA's part, because part of the challenge for space exploration right now is to reignite enthusiasm on the part of the public after the Challenger debacle and other problems that NASA's had. It seems like this is a very exciting direction, and you've gotten a lot of press play.
Yeah, well, the one thing that we did, too, when we started out, we wanted to know what was the reaction from the aerospace community and the public in this regard. You know, they are basically our customers. And the reaction we put an article in Space News to say that we were starting this, and the reaction we got was overwhelmingly, well, it's about time NASA started to assess these possibilities, as opposed to the, well, you guys are crazy. And so the reaction, yeah, has been considerably positive, more so than I was anticipating. This subject seems to strike a passion with people. I don't know if that's because of the science fiction or because if we do achieve these breakthroughs, we would actually enable practical interstellar travel, which, I mean, the possibility of reaching other worlds and the benefit that might be is, like, almost too big to ponder.
Have you paid much attention to the various attempts to develop an algorithm for predicting the existence of life on other stars?
Oh, the Drake equation?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it was another question someone asked, how far would we have to go out before there's the likelihood that we encounter something?
Right.
And I was trying to find the Drake equation and work it backwards to calculate that. In other words, you input the probability that you encounter something, say 50%, and then get back the number of stars that you star systems you have to visit.
That's
before
right.
You're likely to reach that. And I wasn't able to find the equation, but that would be one way to kind of get that answer.
Right.
The uncertainty, though, in that Drake equation, you have to make guesses about a lot of things. How many planets are around stars? How many life is likely to evolve? How many years will the civilization actually be in a way that could communicate with us? And, you know, all of those are big unknowns, so there would be a huge uncertainty range in whatever answer you got anyway.
Well, there's been a renewed amount of enthusiasm on the part of xenobiologists and astrophysicists with the discovery of planets around other stars and the discovery of water on Europa. It seems like the possibilities of life have dramatically increased.
Mm-hmm. And also, too, the idea of, I guess the analogy that I remember from Robert Forward, and the analogy was drawn to the life forms that we have on the bottom of our ocean, where we didn't think things could live, that were a chemical
inside
process.
Volcanoes.
Yeah, and but the idea, even if you had something like a brown dwarf that was just a warm planet a body that wasn't big enough to turn into a sun but was big enough to be warm, that could you have some other life processes going on there that we could discover?
One of the problems that NASA faces is that the forms of propulsion that we have now are so expensive. As you said, it takes astronomical amounts of propulsion to get out of our gravity well and then to go any significant distance, that it seems like a lot of space enthusiasts are turning their attention to the medium-term future. When we've solved these propulsion problems, then we may be able to go to Mars and do intrasolar and then extrasolar exploration. Is that part of the rationale here as well, that we're beginning to see the technical constraints on our current methods?
Well, the constraints have always been known. I guess the good way to put it is that, you know, NASA has to cover the full spectrum of possibilities, from operating what we already have today to making improvements to that, to to finding the next step to make it less expensive to get into space and what have you, and then all the way on the other extreme of looking to the emerging science to see if breakthroughs. And how you balance your priorities amongst that, you know, that's one of the challenges that NASA faces. In general, most of the attention is on the nearer term, which is a pretty sane way to go. But yeah, there's been a lot of, I guess, that's a good way to put it, taking a real hard look at other ways of just getting Earth to orbit down to make it cheaper. Mm-hmm. And that's where a lot of effort is ongoing now.
Mm-hmm. Arthur C. Clarke has proposed the idea of a space elevator. Is any research at NASA looking into that?
Okay, you mean like, what was that? There was a Russian name, I think, associated with that.
Having a geosynchronous satellite,
yeah,
and then a connection between that.
Okay.
And
if I recall correctly, and actually Jeff Landis is a person who I think has run some numbers recently on that, the challenge is to find materials with enough tensile strength. Or is it compressive strength? I forget where the problems really lie to make that feasible. A related one where research is actually ongoing is on space tethers, about using cables for a number of reasons. And there's been the ones that have flown on the shuttle, which did get a fair amount of press. There's also been some smaller experiments on sounding rockets, and there's some work going on for some other flight experiments of using tethers for a number of reasons, for deorbiting spacecraft, for doing orbit changes, and things like that. And I believe Hoyt Tethers is one of the companies that's involved with that. I'm not sure if I'm remembering the names correctly.
Do you have connections from your website to some of these projects that you're working on?
Unfortunately, no. As a matter of fact, my website is long overdue for some updates, and I know that there are websites that exist on those. If someone wanted to do a search on the space tethers, they could probably find the tether site. I don't know if there's anything about the space elevator.
There are. If people do searches on search engines, they can find a number of sites that are exploring or gathering information about breakthrough propulsion methods. But, of course, it's a field that is rife with speculation, if you're kind, and crackpots, if you're unkind. But your site is www.lerc.nasa.gov/www.bpp/. www/bpp/. And I urge people to take a look at what you're doing.
And if they do a search on breakthrough propulsion physics, they should be able to find it too.
Excellent. So that's a key term now in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.